And this weekend marks the 16th anniversary of man landing on and then walking on the moon. The moon, which has inspired so many songs and lyrics over the years, is the subject of our theme set this week at WNEW-FM.
Rainy nights in March, making you amazed, singing songs of angel flights and silver traveling days, making all my life sound like a lark, trying to sing my heart out, trying to make a start. Now won't you hang a rising moon on this sinking heart of mine, and lead my willful sadness to its rest, and roll me o'er an ocean where the days ride deep below me, and something that was mine will be mine again. Sitting here beside you till it's far too late to leave, pretending nothing's on my mind and nothing's up my sleeve, but feeling I could very nearly touch you should I take you without warning. Stay until the morning comes, oh, hang a rising moon on this sinking heart of mine, lead my willful sadness to its rest, and roll me o'er an ocean where the days ride deep below me, and something that was mine will be mine again.
talking's not so easy. Singing's just not fair. It puts you in a woman's soul to wonder how you got there. So I guess I'll just take all the time I need. And I'll kiss you when I know you. Find a way to show you you can hang a rising moon on this sinking heart of mine. And lead my willful sadness to its rest. And roll me o'er an ocean where the days ride deep below me. And something that was mine will be mine again.
I'm being followed by a moon shadow, leaping and hopping on a moon shadow. And if I ever lose my hands, lose my plow, lose my land, oh, if I ever lose my hands, oh, I won't have to work no more. And if I ever lose my eyes, if my colors all run dry, yes, if I ever lose my eyes, oh, yeah, I won't have to cry no more. Yes, I'm being followed by a moon shadow. Leaping and hopping on a moon shadow. And if I ever lose my legs, I won't moan and I won't beg. Oh, if I ever lose my legs, oh, I won't have to walk no more. And if I ever lose my mouth, all my teeth, north and south, yes, if I ever lose my mouth, oh, if I won't have to talk. Take long to find me. I ask the faithful light. Oh, did it take long to find me? And are you gonna stay the night?
I'm being followed by a moon shadow. Leaping and hopping on a moon shadow.
Song about the moon. Walk along the craters of the afternoon. When the shadows are deep and the light is alien, and gravity leaps like a knife off the pavement. And you want to write a song about the moon. You want to write a spiritual tune. The na 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 na, yeah.
Preston, a song about the moon. If you want to write a song about the heart, think about the moon before you start. Because the heart will howl like a dog in the moonlight, and the heart can explode like a pistol on a June night. So if you want to write a song about the heart, and it's ever longing for a counterpart, then na-na-na-na-na-na, yeah, 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 write a song about the moon. To write a song about a face, think about a photograph that you really can't remember but you can't erase. Wash your hands in dreams and lightning, cut off your hair, whatever is frightening. If you want to write a song about a face, if you want to write a song about the human race, the na 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 na, yeah, yeah, yeah. Write a song about the moon. You want to write a song about the moon. You want to write a spiritual tune.
There's a moon over Bourbon Street tonight. I see faces as they pass beneath the pale lamp light. I've no choice but to follow that call. The bright lights, the people, and the moon and all. I pray every day to be strong, for I know what I do must be wrong. Oh, you'll never see my shade or hear the sound of my feet while there's a moon over Bourbon. Many years ago that I became what I am. I was trapped in this life like an innocent lamb. Now I can never show my face at noon, and you'll only see me walking by the light of the moon. The brim of my hat hides the eye of a beast. I'm the face of a sinner, but the hands of a priest. Oh, you'll never see my sheet or hear the sound of my feet while there's a moon over Bourbon Street. Every day through the streets of New Orleans, she's innocent and young, from a family of means. I've stood many times outside her window at night to struggle with my instinct in the pale. Could I be this way when I pray to God above? I must love what I destroy and destroy the thing I love. Oh, you'll never see my shade or hear the sound of my feet while there's a moon over Bourbon.
We conclude our theme set about the moon with Sting from his solo album, The Dream of the Blue Turtles. And Moon Over Bourbon Street. Paul Simon before that from Hearts and Bones, Song About the Moon. Cat Stevens well represented on the program today on his birthday, in this instance with Moonshadow. Hugh Blumenfeld. He was at the Speakeasy last night, I believe, and that's one of his songs from one of the Fast Folk albums, Rising Moon, and Jonathan King's 1965 hit, starting things off, Everyone's Gone to the Moon. Just about 10 o'clock, Pete Fornital on Mixed Bag in our final hour today, a visit with Joan Baez, and we'll also be seeking a Mixed Bag couple to join us at the bitter end on Tuesday for Peter, Paul, and Mary. All on WNEW-FM in New York.
The Real Equality Test. Good morning, I'm Jeff Finch from The Source. And America's first woman in space, Sally Ride, says her historic space shuttle ride merely opened a door. It's the women who have followed her who have helped make spaceflight an equal opportunity venture.
I said that I looked forward to a time when it would be taken for granted that there were women on the space shuttle crew. I think women are accepted by the public now. Women are not the headlines when the space shuttle goes up. And the public considers women to be an integral part of the space program.
Wright was speaking at NOW's convention in New Orleans, a meeting that has been less than harmonious. Ballots are still being counted in the bitter battle for the National Organization for Women's presidency. Incumbent Judy Goldsmith's fighting a fierce challenge from former NOW president Eleanor Smeal. You may be able to take a trip on the space shuttle in 8 to 10 years or so. That's according to the head of a company hoping to offer space vacations. Stephen Van Til, president of Orbital Projects, met with NASA officials at Cape Canaveral yesterday to talk about that idea. Police in Sydney, Australia, say one man was killed in the bomb blast that wrecked a Jehovah's Witness church this morning. So far, no one has claimed responsibility for the explosion. Lebanon Radio says Israeli troops staged a lightning helicopter raid on a Shiite Muslim village in southern Lebanon today, and several civilians were wounded during a violent house-to-house search. There's been no confirmation of that report from Israel. The West Russian forest fire crisis has eased, but it's not over. In Idaho, the Forestry Department's Dave Ponson says firefighters are slowly gaining the upper hand over three blazes in the western part of the state.
Regionally, our resources are stretched thin, but at this time, at least I'm fairly comfortable that we have the capability of controlling the action we have.
To the south in Nevada, firefighters have almost surrounded a range fire that scorched 3,000 acres. And Bruce Springsteen has proven he's the boss of the greater New York City area. It took a little over a day for his four shows at Giant Stadium to sell out. We are talking 240,000 tickets. And that's news. I'm Jeff Finch from The Source.
know who's got those good vibrations? Sunkist Orange Soda, the pop sensation.
Sunkist, good vibrations.
A sun-kissed orange soda taste sensation. Sun-kissed.
Lavonda won't ride with us, Bubba.
This car looks too ugly?
No.
Oh.
You say too many stupid things.
Oh, you sure it's not the rust, Tony?
She loves the car.
Well,
I'm in it, ain't I?
Yeah, but Tony, she said the car looks like it has a skin disease.
Your car can look better. Rust-Oleum introduces the first complete line of car products uniquely formulated to fight rust. New Rust-Oleum car waxes, body fillers, and touch-up paints. With Rust-Oleum's new auto care products, your car can look better, longer.
Okay, Bubba, there she is. I'll prove she doesn't mind the rust.
All right.
Hey, Lavonda, you need a ride or what?
No, thanks. I haven't had my tetanus shot.
Oh, man.
Nobody fights rust like Rust-Oleum.
What better time to work on your car than now that it's summer? Take advantage of the fine weather by picking up the new Rust-Oleum Auto Care products, car waxes, body fillers, and touch-up paints. Available at participating Caldor, Rickles Home Centers, Jamesway, and R&S Home and Auto Stores. Use Rust-Oleum Auto Care products while the weather's nice, and they'll protect your car from rust come rain or shine.
I can't believe it. I finally made it to your cave, Great Master. Please, I've come thousands of miles. Tell me the meaning of life.
Certainly. Life, you see, is a party.
A party?
That's what I said. A party. A birthday party. A retirement party. A bowling banquet. A wedding reception. Any occasion. You see, life is made up of parties.
Oh, well, if life is a party, how can I be successful in life?
Hire the pros.
The pros, entertainers?
Certainly, Inquisitive One. They entertain at every kind of party and make each special by custom designing the entertainment for the crowd. Last year, they entertained over 1 million people. They're affordable, dependable, and professional. I always call 1-800-THE-PROS for my parties.
Your parties?
Certainly, Strange One. You don't think I spend all my time on top of this stupid mountain, do you? Now, excuse me. I'm partying tonight with the pros, and I have to polish my BMW and call my honey.
Call now, 800-THE-PROS, for all your warm weather entertainment needs.
78 degrees and sunny at 5 after 10. Hazy sunshine and very warm today, high 85 to 90. Tonight, cloudy, warm, and humid with a few thundershowers likely, low in the low 70s. Pete Fornichal on Mixed Bag this Sunday morning. Joining us later this hour, Joan Baez, an interview recorded a while ago on when she was in town for a couple of concerts at the Beacon Theater. And as I've been mentioning throughout the program today, Peter, Paul, and Mary will be kicking off their 25th anniversary year with a special benefit concert on Tuesday night at the place where it all started for them, the Bitter End. It proves to be, should be a historic evening. It is all for the Charity Bailey Children's Folk Music Project. Charity Bailey was a teacher at the Little Red Schoolhouse in Greenwich Village, and one of her former pupils was Mary Travers. And she, along with Peter and Paul, want to create a folk music curriculum for children, so this concert will help raise seed money for that. Now, we only have one pair of tickets. So one Mixed Bag couple will be joining John Platt and myself on Tuesday night at the Bitter End. And here's how we're going to do it. There's no denying the instrumental role that Peter, Paul, and Mary played in launching the career of Bob Dylan with their cover version of Blowin' in the Wind. When they finally got around to doing a best of album in 1970-71, which was called The Best of Peter, Paul, and Mary, 10 Years Together, they covered two other Bob Dylan songs in addition to Blowin' in the Wind. I'll take the first caller at random who can identify those two other Bob Dylan songs on The Best of Peter, Paul, and Mary, and they'll join us Tuesday night at the Bitter End. The number to call is 212-955-WNEW.
They're the only times I've ever known. And I believe there is a time for meditation in cathedrals of our own. Now I have seen that sad surrender in my lover's eyes, and I can only stand apart and sympathize. For we are always what our situations hand us, either sadness or euphoria. Sadness or euphoria. So we'll argue and we'll compromise and realize that nothing's really changed. For our mutual experience, our separate conclusions are the same. Recognize our inhumanity. Our reason coexists with our insanity. And though we choose between reality and madness, it's either sadness or euphoria. Sadness or euphoria.
Ice cream day dream till the sky. saying hello.
Have you been here? Little human upon the sand, from where I'm lying here in your hand, you to me are but a passing breeze. The sun will always shine where you stand, depending in which land you may find yourself. Now you have my blessing, go your way. Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself be. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself see. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs in the circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself see. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Why are because? Why are because? Why are because? Why are because? Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself see. You can have everything if you let yourself be. You can have everything if you let yourself be. You can have everything if you let yourself be.
It's not time to make a change. Just relax.
take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. I was once like you are now, and I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on. But take your time, think a lot. Why, think of everything you've got, for you will still be here tomorrow, but your dreams may not. How can I try to explain? When I do, he turns away again. It's always been the same, same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go. Change, just sit down, take it slowly. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to go through. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. Keeping all the things I knew inside. It's hard, but it's harder to ignore it. If they were right, I'd agree. But it's them they know, not me. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go.
Happy 38th birthday to Cat Stevens, wherever he is. Two final selections from our featured album, Tea for the Tillerman Father and Son, and On the Road to Find Out. Joan Baez up next on Mixed Bag after these messages.
And now, a word about the American family car. We take it shopping, we take it on vacation, we take it for granted. Bridgestone does not. Bridgestone's The Only Tire Sale is featuring the Bridgestone 212V Radial, the all-around high-mileage radial for midsize to large American and many import sedans, the family car. Bridgestone builds performance into every tire it makes. The 212V Radial gives the family car an aggressive tread pattern that really bites down. Two steel belts wrapped by two polyester cord plies make Bridgestone's 212V tough. But now, it's easier to buy. During Bridgestone's The Only Tire Sale, you can save on the family car radial. The Bridgestone 212V, a great radial tire at prices a family can afford.
Bridgestone's The Only Tire Sale ends August 3rd, so call 1-800-453-7000 for the participating Bridgestone dealer near you. That's 1-800-453-7000.
There's a style in your life no one could ever deny. On your way, moving up. You were always the one who's eager to try. You're on your way to the top, and along the way, you've always known just who you are. play. You've got it going your way. You love to share the way you feel. Take a look.
Where you're going, it's exceptionally smooth Michelob.
Where you're going, it's Michelob. Where you're going, it's Michelob.
Michelob beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
There are a lot of season tickets you can get in New Jersey.
You're telling me it's hard to
choose. Some give you excitement.
Did you see that pass? He's got it. He's going all the way. Touchdown!
Drama.
Broadway. Who needs Broadway? That show at the Garden State Arts Center was terrific.
The thrill of winning.
Come on, 2 seconds left. He shoots, he scores, New Jersey wins!
But only one season ticket gives you all that, plus lots of chances to win millions.
That's some ticket. What is it?
The New Jersey Lottery Pick 6 Lotto Season Ticket. It gives you 11 weeks of advance play for only $10.
That's a free week to win millions.
That's right. And with this season ticket, you can be part of the fun at home or on vacation.
How do I get one?
You can pick them up at your New Jersey State Lottery agent now.
You know, with this season ticket, I could win enough to buy all the other season tickets I could ever want.
Get your season ticket for excitement, drama, the thrill of winning, plus extra chances to win millions.
Come to think of it, I could buy the whole team.
The New Jersey Lottery Pick 6 Lotto Season Ticket. 11 weeks for $10.
This is Pete Fornital on location at the Mayflower Hotel in New York City, of all places, with my special guest, Joan Baez. Joan, the first thing that occurs to me to ask you is how you feel generally about the interview process these days.
Well, I've always liked, no, I can't say always, at the beginning, I suppose I didn't, when I was really younger, it was just end of teens, and I was so afraid that I would say the wrong thing, or I was afraid to be silly or anything like that, but I'm such a blabber, you know, that I'm bound to really, in the end, I like it quite a bit.
Do you feel as if you have been treated fairly in press interviews?
Oh, I do, in fact. I don't think that it's, I mean, a lot of lousy things are said about people. I mean, I was aware of my position 15, 20 years ago. It was not a very popular position in a lot of places. So if you think people are going to print roses when you're saying things they don't want to hear, then my experience has been it's usually not something the press has done to me that makes me unhappy when I see it in print. It's usually if it's something that's true I wish I hadn't said or done. It's usually, I think that's really usually more the case.
And it is often an opportunity for you to bring to the public things that are of current concern to you. What would such a thing be in 1985?
Well, that's a big order. I mean, I'm currently writing a book because I really couldn't find any other way to do it, you know, unless I had a daily column somewhere where I could, my gripe column, where I could say the things that I felt strongly about. I think I really felt as though a book might be one way to start in. For somebody like me and many people I know who are of similar mind anyway, this time period in the 80s is kind of like, you know, staring at a tidal wave coming at us. And we're trying to move in that direction, or at least sometimes I think just hold my ground, you know, in the new patriotism, this wild, myopic optimism, everything's going to be swell, let's all make a lot of money, let's watch MTV. I mean, where do you even breathe to bring? I refer to my concerts as a safe haven for the sane, you know, if nothing else. There, that's what I try to do.
That does seem to be, I mean, we seem to have moved very far away from a lot of the values and causes that have been espoused in your music over the years. Are you disappointed by that?
No, I'm not disappointed because, and I'm not disillusioned. And I think if I had gotten disillusioned, it would have been because I had illusions to begin with. And for some reason, I'm not sure why, maybe it's because I have some sort of halfway intelligent insight into human change, human possibilities, social change, political change. Some things come very quickly and then fade away. The things that are meaningful, or, I mean, for instance, the things that I ideally think have to happen to create a sane world will certainly not happen in my lifetime. I'm not going to see the end of a military. I'm not going to see the end of the nation state. I'm not going to see the end of apathy. I'm not going to see the end of hunger. And I think when we get disillusioned, it's because somehow or other we flared up, you know, got inflamed and set off to make the changes. And combined with some sort of monumentally distorted ego, thought we were going to do it all in a 6 months' time or a spring vacation or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I think knowing that helps not to be disappointed. No, I get frustrated like everybody else. Get frustrated and think, well, what the hell do you do next to try to make an impact or make some sense? But obviously staying active is one of the cures to that. If you don't, then you really go under fast.
Before we get too far away from it, what is the subject of the book and how far along in the process are you?
Well, I wrote a book once 18 years ago, and the way I write easily is autobiographical vignettes. This one is the same thing, only I think I take more care now, and I'm not as impatient as I was back then. And so it's, you know, journeys over the last 25 or 30 years. I've met a lot of people, been through a lot of things, sat under the bombs in Hanoi, marched with Martin Luther King. And I think if those stories are told in an interesting way, and then an example would be telling, you know, about a march with King and the kids then, I mean, the young kids and what they lived through and what they went through. And then just a very brief little story of meeting a black girl working in a shoes shop in California. And we got talking, and she said something about having known that I did those things back then. And I said, was she sorry she'd missed out on that? She said, not at all. She's delighted to be living in the 80s. She wanted to make a lot of money. You know, I mean, and I think those, to tell the stories like that, maybe as it provides a perspective on history. And I can also get out some of my concerns about the 1980s.
Of course, music has always been a way for you to communicate and tell stories as well. Why do you think that your music is unwelcome at U.S. record companies these days, even some for which you have been very successful in the past?
Yeah, well, I would think it would be less confusing if it were universal. I mean, but the fact that I can get, you know, a very successful record out in France with the things that I do is what makes it... You have to pause and try and understand it. I don't understand all of it. I do understand that the record industry is interested in one thing, and that's making money. In the United States, I am not currently a big money maker. I mean, I'm outside of the industry. I function outside of the industry. I really have nothing to do with it, and they really don't want anything to do with me unless I sort of change my attitude and get with it and think about hits and write hits and do short songs with hooks and upbeats. And you know, I can't do that. It's not what I do well. And so for the number of years, I haven't had a record company. I think that I'm lucky to live in an age when I can do concerts as a separate vocation almost, mm-hmm. you know, and that people come to the concerts and I like to do them. And at some point, I'm sure I'll have a record company again. I think that the record companies try to dictate what the young people think and do, and they may be off just a little bit. I mean, I think that there is a buying public for my voice, melodies, music, and words. It's not. I'm not in a league with the top sellers at the moment and may never be again. But I think where they're off is that they're passing up something that has some value and that could sell.
I've got two questions that triggered. One is about why is it different in Europe? Why is it seemingly a different system?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is that in almost every home you would walk into, in just about any country in Europe, when people sit down at the dinner table, they talk about politics. It's part of their lives. Even if there will be a punk movement, there'll be young kids that don't give a damn, et cetera, and they'll imitate the states, but they, unless there is some change that's really beyond me, or that would take a number of years or even decades, they still think... they think in terms of the world. They think in terms of their size as a small country. They think politically and they think socially. And young people at the moment, at least in this country, don't have to, so they don't. Mm-hmm. We somehow, to be invulnerable is the most important order of the day. And young people here would rather buy that we are invulnerable. And that's why Reagan won the election. People want to think that. They want to, quote, feel good about themselves. That's the most important thing in America. Mm-hmm. And that's pathetic. because at some that can't hold you together. It's not. It doesn't make glue. It doesn't make cohesiveness. It doesn't make decent human behavior. It just makes a flash in the pan.
In the final analysis, it's not real.
That's correct. Yeah. I think it's a facade. Yeah.
The second question that was triggered by your earlier answer is that at times in your career, specifically around Diamonds and Rust, you were totally in tune with what was going on commercially and with the record-buying public. With the wisdom of hindsight, what do you attribute that moment to, that success to?
Well, the musical success, at that point, I put a big effort into music at that time. And musically, I think that paid off. But I wasn't internally very happy with what I was doing. I mean, I made a big effort to give a concert without doing a lot of preaching about the things I cared about. And those were all days when we were all juggling our thoughts and feelings, you know, between the end of the war in Vietnam and what's coming next. And I thought, well, maybe this is the thing I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe this is what I should do to be conscientious to my music and my career. And I did, and with some very good musical results, but I went bankrupt in the heart and fairly quickly after that. And it would be ideal to be able to do all of those things. And my problem is there are just too many things that I want to do.
Speaking strictly from things fade. Cause I need some of that vagueness now, it's all come back too clearly. Yes, I loved you dearly. And if you're offering me diamonds and love, I've already paid.
That's the only time in my life, except at the very beginning when I was 18 and 19 years old, when I would make a record, and that was the only thing on my mind was that record. You know, and it was easier back then. I did ballads. It took me 3 days to make an album.
Was that the circumstance around your first record?
Yeah, it took 3 days, and we recorded in the big, dirty lobby of a hotel in New York, and we could record any night except Wednesday when they had bingo. You know, and it was, there were two wires running from me and the microphone upstairs to some dirty little room.
High
and
tech, I can
yeah,
tell.
Yeah, this was high tech city, and you know, we just sort of had just moved into stereo. So that's 26 years ago.
What material from those days is still meaningful to you, and that you still do in concert?
Very little of it in concert. A lot of it is still. I mean, that stuff holds up, and was. One could make selling albums with that then, because it's beautiful music. Mm-hmm. I mean, that came from somewhere, those folk songs and the English ballads and the American early American ballads. Their beauty, something to do with beauty and death, you know, something to do with longings of people, and people wanted to be introspective, and that music filled, it certainly filled something in me. It was just, I thought, monumentally beautiful. I'll do something like, you know, one song off of an early album in a concert now. You know, a Mary Hamilton or something like that.
You mentioned 26 years ago, and I'm thinking...
My teeth fell out right when I said it.
I'm thinking 1959, that's the Newport Folk Festival where you emerged. The circumstances were...
Bob Gibson, I had been... The only time I'd ever sung in an official nightclub was when I was 18, and I went to sing in the Gate of Horn in Chicago, because I felt, again, that I must try it out, because people say you make a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. And I said no, because, frankly, I was frightened. I was frightened of traveling by myself, and I was frightened that a nightclub would make me into a bad person. You know, that was my 18-year-old thinking. So I went, and I didn't like it, but I liked Bob. He was wonderful, and he was fun, and he invited me to the Newport Festival, and he introduced me, and we sang two songs, and it was a big do.
The Virgin Mary had a one song. Oh, glory, hallelujah. Be to the newborn King.
success came quickly after that. How'd you handle it?
Oh, as stupidly as everybody else who has success that comes quickly. And, you know, I watch the young people now are really young on the Grammys. I think, you know, I'll say a little prayer for them because I was 18, and up until then, my image of myself had been not very good. I thought, you know, I'd been in Southern California. I had a lot of sort of racial problems down there being Mexican. So I thought I was a stupid, skinny Mexican, basically. And so all of a sudden they're telling me I'm the Virgin Mary, and, well, who is not going to buy that? I thought that was terrific. I didn't wear shoes for about the next 5 years. I was so convinced. And all that puritanical stuff was also in my family. So that was signed it and sealed it. The difficult part is that I was shy but wouldn't admit it, and so I was just sort of grumpy in concert. I mean, very abrupt with people, and it's because I was afraid my repertoire wasn't any good and so on, you know, really insecure.
You mentioned the Grammys just offhandedly, but the one that you appeared at 2 years ago left such a startling visual image in people's minds. First of all, it was unannounced and unexpected. It ended up being written about as a Time essay, you may remember, after the fact. Was that a good moment for you? How do you feel about it?
Well, I feel both ways. I mean, obviously, I like to move people. And that was nice that happened. On the other hand, dragging myself out of the 60s and bringing anybody with me has been just monumentally difficult, because that's when my visibility was high. If my visibility is never that high again, that is how I will always be remembered. Yeah. So all these years in between, as I write songs, I do things, I have children, I go through life, they don't count. You know, so that's the difficulty with doing something like that. It just keeps, aside from the fact that I had, you know, about 13 pounds less hair, it was sticking me back again into the place, the slot where people remember me.
When did your music and your activism coalesce? It wasn't right from the start, or was it?
Well, they didn't coalesce until, I would say... Well, it wasn't too long into it. It would be in the civil rights movement in the South, and that was the beginning of it. I just finished writing a lot of this, as a matter of fact. I had stopped saluting the flag when I was 16 years old because I thought it was nonsense. And I had stayed in school to protest an air raid drill when I was 16. And so I had launched my social political career when I was very young, but the songs didn't have anything to do with that, really. And I was busy being in love when I started making recordings. That's more what I was thinking about than politics.
I don't know if this is a well-timed segue or not, but I was thinking of making this one of the only interviews in your life in which you were not asked about Bob Dylan, but I can't help it.
Okay, it's okay.
When did you first become aware of Bob?
Gertie's Folk City in 61, I think it was 1961. And somebody said, oh, you got to hear this guy. And I went down, and that's my boyfriend. I was cursing him out. I was wishing I weren't with him because I was very inhibited, and I wanted to tell Bob how fantastic I thought he was. And anyway, that was quite early on.
Were you surprised by his...
I was surprised and absolutely delighted. And I, you know, as you know, because you've probably done your research, I dragged him around to my concerts and propped him up in the audience to go, boo, yuck, take him home. Who is this creature with a dirty little T-shirt on? And I knew that he was an absolute wizard and a mystic and a genius.
Does that personal relationship still have sparks for you musically or any other way?
I don't really see Bob. Seen him for a long time or spend any time with him. I was on tour with him in Europe and I didn't see him. So, no.
Around the time of Rolling Thunder?
Yeah, that was wonderful. Rolling Thunder was fantastic. It really was, I mean, it's a little bizarre, but that's a given. And it was filled with sparks and energy. So.
Yeah. By coincidence, Woodstock is running on PBS.
Oh, is it really? I love that film.
Yeah, we were talking about it on the way over here, and I remember, of course, responding to it initially as a newsreel.
Yeah, yeah.
When you first saw it, and now, of course, it's not a newsreel anymore. It's much more of a documentary and a set piece. But the fact that beyond your control, these images can be hurled in, of you 16 years ago can be hurled in someone's living room.
does that please you or upset you?
Well, it depends on the image. You know, if you thought you looked horrible or sounded horrible and you think, oh dear, are they going to run that again? But as I remember, I enjoyed watching the Woodstock. I mean, I was okay. I was fat and pregnant and, you know, sort of pleased with myself and in good voice. So it's flattering.
And, of course, it was a time when musical forms were much more compatible, it seemed. There wasn't the separation in music that radio seems to promote today.
I see what you mean, yeah.
You know, Alvin Lee in 10 Years After and Joan Baez mm-hmm. can be part of the same.
Well, you see, and that's, curiously enough, that's the way it still is in Europe for me. I mean, they can have Genesis and Frank Zappa. This was 5 years ago or 6 years ago we discovered this, and me. And, you know, and they can't. Or I wouldn't want to try it here even.
Boy, I think that's much healthier, though, that way.
I think so, yeah.
Just a couple more things. We just noticed a date coming up when the Smothers Brothers network television show was canceled, centering around an appearance by you.
Yeah.
Well, what do you recall about that?
Well, I'm so stuffy, and I still am when I go on television. As a medium, it's very confusing for me because it's so terribly superficial. But I said, you know, I'd like to sing this song, and we were together on it, Tommy and I talked about it. I said, I'm just going to dedicate it to my husband because he's in jail for draft resistance. Well, I got three words out, and all the red lights went on, and the next thing I knew, the show was off the air, and so were the Smothers Brothers. And they were tough guys. I mean, they could have said, hey, Joni, will you water that down? But they were just ready to say that they'd had it, too, and they wanted to make a statement, and that was, I was happy to be included in that, you know, part of that, their statement.
Tell me a little bit about your son.
He's a giant, and he is probably not going to go into music, happily. And he doesn't like to be talked about. But yeah. He is coming to New York concert, and I'm as dither-brained as any mother who hasn't seen her son for a while. I'm very excited to see him.
Last question, Joan. How does someone like yourself, who's campaigned so long for nonviolence, not despair in a society like ours, which is so fraught with it?
Yeah. Well, sometimes I think I'm just stupid. I mean, that's one of the possibilities. Just I'm a complete ass, you know, and so I keep on keeping on. But it's more what I said before. You know, if I had any illusions that somehow my little tiny self was going to make a great big dent and there would be one less war out of the 40 we're having now, then I would have quit a long time ago. But I think, you know, little victories and big defeats, and it's the little victories that count. I mean, the other night I was singing in Montpelier, and people started singing Amazing Grace, and they just sang it so beautifully that I couldn't. I started to cry. You can't cry and sing at the same time. I learned that many years ago. And I thought, okay, this is worth it. You know, for another night, another audience singing like this, I'll go another 5 years.
Would you consider performing something for us?
Yeah, I was trying to think of what I could do for you. Just be something a cappella.
Sure.
And so a song that I used to sing for Martin Luther King when they would nudge me in the ribs and say, you go wake him up, because nobody else wanted to. And there were a couple of them. And one of them is the following. I am a poor pilgrim of sorrow. I travel this wide world alone, but hopes have I for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. what I've heard of a city called heaven. Oh, when they're trying to make it mine, oh, my home. Amen.
And that's just about it for this Sunday morning. My thanks to Joan Baez for being our guest. Thanks, too, to John Platt. This is Pete Fornatale. Stay tuned for Scott Muni's Ticket to Ride, and I'll be back next weekend right here at 102.7 WNEW-FM in New York.